Hi, it's Kieran here from The Week Junior Show. I just wanted to let you know about the new podcast from The Week Junior's Science and Nature magazine called Mysteries of Science. You're about to hear our very first episode, which is an investigation into the Loch Ness Monster. Like all the upcoming episodes of Mysteries of Science, we have expert guests guiding us through the unexplainable world of Mysteries of Science. Today, we've got an author and two real-life monster hunters joining us. So I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, and welcome to the first ever episode of Mysteries of Science. My name's Dan, and I'm the editor of Science and Nature, a monthly magazine from the team behind The Week Junior.
And I'm Kieran, the features editor. In each issue of Science and Nature, we explore the universe through in-depth features, news stories, awe-inspiring images, interviews with top experts, and much more.
Here on the podcast, we're going to dive even deeper into one of my favourite parts of the magazine, Mysteries of Science. We're going to be looking at the stories that have left scientists scratching their heads and, despite their best attempts, remain well and truly unsolved. From mythical monsters to questions about life in the universe, there are mysteries of science everywhere we look, and we love them.
Today, we're going to take a close look at one of the biggest monster mysteries of all, the Loch Ness Monster.
Ah, yes, Nessie, the world-famous creature. What can you tell me about her, Kieran?
Well, she's said to rule Scotland's second largest loch, and with her famous humps and plenty of reported sightings throughout history, she's captured our imagination for centuries. And she's still inspiring new books and films today.
We asked some of our readers to send in their questions about Nessie and tell us what they think about the famous monster.
Although I don't personally believe in monsters, I think that the Loch Ness Monster has equal chances of being real or not real.
It's sort of a snake with sort of dragon head and it lives in the water.
When did someone first see the Loch Ness Monster? Where even is Loch Ness?
So there's a lot of questions to answer. Could a monster really live under our noses for so long? Why do we love Nessie so much? And if there is something out there in the loch, what exactly is it? I think if we're going to answer those questions, we need to hear from some real-life monster hunters, learn a bit more about Scotland's legendary creatures, and take a close look at all the science that's been carried out at Loch Ness in the past 100 years.
This is Mysteries of Science. Before we get too deep into the mystery, let's get to know Loch Ness itself. It's a huge freshwater lake.
Or, as we call it in Scotland, a loch.
Yes, a loch. It's a huge loch. At its deepest point, you could stack Big Ben's tower on top of the London Eye, and then you'd need to be right at the top on tippy toes to break through the surface. In fact, if you wanted to swim from one end to the other, you'd have to be brilliant at front crawl and pretty brave as well, because the loch stretches for more than 20 miles. Actually, it's confession time. That was all thanks to Wikipedia. I've never actually been to Loch Ness.
Fortunately for you, Dan, I have been to Loch Ness myself. It was many years ago on a really foggy, rainy day. The atmosphere was just incredible. Here's how Gary Campbell, who's been tracking Nessie sightings online for over 25 years, would describe Loch Ness to somebody who's never been.
I think the first thing you've got to understand is quite how large Loch Ness is, both in terms of the volume of water. And one of the statistics is that it's got more water in it than all the lakes and reservoirs in England and Wales combined. And if you stand at the top end of the loch, at a place called Doors, you can't see the other end of the loch because of the curvature of the air. So immediately when you turn up at Loch Ness, like you did as a child, you see this large body of water. It doesn't look too much if you're going down one side to the other because it's only a mile across, so you can clearly see the other side. But what you can't see is the other end.
The murky water may seem spooky, but people have lived undisturbed around Loch Ness for centuries. It sits in the Great Glen Fault, this deep valley that stretches diagonally across the Scottish Highlands. And stories of something strange lurking here date back thousands of years. But where do they come from?
Hello, my name's Larry Dawn. I'm a Scottish children's writer and storyteller, and I've recently written a book called The Treasure of the Loch Ness Monster, which was illustrated by the wonderful Natasha Ilinčić.
Larry knows all about Scottish mythology. In fact, Nessie is not the only legendary water beast from Scotland.
Ooh, you mean if you were going to dive into the water of Scottish folklore, what might you pass as you were swimming around? You'd see quite a lot of shapeshifters. There are shapeshifters in lots of different cultures, mythologies and folklore, but Scotland has an awful lot of shapeshifters. If you're in rivers or lochs in Scotland, you might well meet a Kelpie. I would very much advise you to swim away very fast if you do. Do not hang around. Leave as fast as you can. Kelpies are the baddies of Scottish folklore.
Yes, the Kelpie. It's one of the scariest Scottish legends, because while on land, this shape-shifting spirit appears to be a beautiful horse or human, it'll always try to lead you back into the water to drown you. Tales of Kelpies exist right the way across Scotland, including in Loch Ness. In fact, the very first written record of a monster in the loch involves a similarly terrifying beast that was said to have emerged from the water in 565 AD. Here's Gary explaining that first encounter.
A guy called St. Columba came from Ireland, and he was converting as local Picts and heathens. Picts are the local indigenous people at the time. One of which I am a descendant of the Pictish people, still here. And he came to Loch Ness, and it was written in his biography the story of how St. Columba, just at the River Ness, where the River Ness meets Loch Ness, a creature had come out to attack one of his men, and he'd taken the sign of the cross and he'd banished the creature back into Loch Ness. And it was the first written account of somebody actually seeing something unusual creature-wise in Loch Ness, so therefore it goes down as the first sighting. And that is almost, you know, it's almost 1,500 years ago. And there have been sightings all the way through since then.
This horrific beast definitely sounds like it could have been a Kelpie. But I guess it's not the monster we're looking for, because when it was driven away by Columba, it seemed to disappear for good. It would be more than 1,000 years before the monster reared its head again.
The Loch Ness Monster, as we know it today, really made its mark in 1933. It was the 14th of April, and Mr. and Mrs. Mackay, who ran a nearby hotel, saw something strange moving through the water. They were driving along the side of the loch when Mrs. Mackay is said to have shouted, "Stop! The beast!" They say they saw something black and wet in the loch before it disappeared from sight. When the Inverness Courier, a local newspaper, published the story a few weeks later, it made history. Here's why.
That one story, which was just one in a line of stories over the years saying about the water kelpie in Loch Ness, but because it contained the word monster, it was picked up by both the national newspapers in Scotland and England, and then it went around the world that there was this monster in this loch in Scotland. Why was it something that people caught on to? One of the reasons that people think it was the case was that 3 weeks beforehand, the film King Kong had been shown around the world, had been launched in cinemas around the world, and it showed obviously this big creature hanging off the Empire State Building. And that was, as everyone knew, was Hollywood and was make-believe. But all of a sudden, wait a minute, there might be a real-life monster sitting in this loch in Scotland that nobody other than the locals had ever heard of. And that's the day the Loch Ness Monster was born, and the water kelpie in Loch Ness was forgotten because it came a monster and people wanted to hunt it.
So, Kieran, let's have a quick recap. As far as I understand it, this is the moment that changed everything in 33. We've got a monster on our hands now. Is that right?
I think that's absolutely right, because what happened in 1933 was this modern sighting of something in the loch. It built on this legend that had been around for a long time, but it made it more modern and it made it more monstrous and it made it way more exciting, I think.
Yeah, so the loch, we know the loch is like huge and deep, so I reckon that probably answers up the first question that we put, that it's not beyond the realms of possibility for something huge to be living under there and maybe go unnoticed for that long.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if you're a huge monster, that probably is quite a good place to hide.
Yeah.
But then that leads us to the next thing, doesn't it? Because if this monster was around for so long, for more than 1,000 years, why is it that it's only relatively recently that we have grown to embrace Nessie in the way that we do now?
Well, here's why. I can tell you, in 1934, one of the most recognisable images that was taken of what was said to be the monster, and it's a photo called the Surgeon's Photo. I'm sure you've seen it. It's the really famous one of the snake-like creature poking out of the water, captured in black and white. And now, I think these days, most people think that image was faked. But At the time, it really excited people's imaginations. The monster got its teeth into us all, and it wasn't about to let go.
One of those people to be captivated by Nessie was Steve Feltham, who now holds the world record for the longest continual hunt for the monster. He's lived on the banks of Loch Ness since 1991 in a converted mobile library van, devoting his life to the search for Nessie.
I first got hooked on the whole mystery when, in 1970, I was a seven-year-old. I came on a family holiday to Loch Ness, and at that time there was a gang of people called the Loch Ness Phenomena Investigation Bureau. They built this platform that stuck out, and on the end of this platform there was this camera on a tripod, and the lens on this camera must have been a metre long. And me, as a seven-year-old boy, I just looked at that and I thought, grown men looking for monsters. This is what I want to do with my life.
So this Loch Ness Phenomena Investigation Bureau, so who were they then?
This was a group that was funded by a couple of members of Parliament, and they were desperate to find Nessie, or at least something in Loch Ness. And as Steve said, they had this platform set up to take a look into the loch and clearly inspired people. But I don't think they were the only people looking for Nessie.
No, there's actually been loads of scientific studies carried out over the whole 20th century, and they used whatever technology was available to probe the depths of the loch. In the early days, many people thought that Nessie was like something called a plesiosaur, which is a giant marine creature that ruled the waves during the time of the dinosaurs. And people who saw that surgeon's photo I was speaking about earlier, they saw that long, bendy neck poking out the water and thought, yeah, that's a plesiosaur, and Steve included. But here's the thing, though. After a lifetime spent at the loch, he's now changed his mind, and he's not looking for a plesiosaur anymore.
When I was a seven-year-old boy, I utterly and completely believed there was plesiosaurs swimming around in Loch Ness, even to the extent of when I arrived full-time with my van on the side of Loch Ness. I was still determined that I was going to eventually identify a plesiosaur in here. But as time's gone on, and especially since the surgeon's photograph got disproven, that has sort of blown the plesiosaur out of the water, really. I have no expectation whatever of finding a plesiosaur in Loch Ness anymore.
Like Steve, Gary agrees a plesiosaur isn't the answer. He saw something strange in the loch 25 years ago, way back in 1996, and this is how he describes it.
I was driving along Loch Ness side. I was doing paperwork for the company I worked with. At the time, I pulled into a lay-by to do paperwork in my car, and I looked out, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw this black thing coming out of the water. It wasn't very big. I'd say it was probably 10 to 12 feet long, but it looked like, the best way to describe it was like a mini whale. And I thought, I'm seeing things. And then it came out again. And at that point, I thought, wait a minute, I've seen something here. I didn't know what it was. I don't know whether it was Nessie or not. I would never say that. But I didn't know what it was. And I'd grown up on lochs and lakes as a small boy, on and off boats. I'd been around water all my life. And it was nothing like I'd ever seen before. And I went off to report it, like, you know, to see if I could report this to somebody to say, look, I think I've seen something. And really to find out what I'd seen. And discovered that there was nobody keeping a list of the sightings of the Loch Ness Monster at that time.
Gary's sighting is one of more than 1,100 known incidents on his database that relate to possible monster encounters. Some of them are just grainy images, but others appear to be a bit more convincing. Okay, for a moment, let's assume that something strange or unusual really does lurk in the depths of Loch Ness. It seems like it's not a plesiosaur or a kelpie, but how do you narrow the options down any further? That's the question that researchers have been asking themselves for decades. And the answer, well, maybe it's in the DNA.
We all have DNA in our cells. It's a chemical that carries all the information about your body and your characteristics. It's a bit like a Lego instruction manual, and it's unique to each individual and species. And because every living thing is always shedding cells, if you take a scoop of any body of water and collect DNA samples from that, then you can identify all the different things that live in there. And this kind of test is called an environmental DNA test, or an eDNA test.
And that's exactly what happened at Loch Ness. In 2019, the findings of a very thorough eDNA test were announced. Researchers had come from New Zealand, led by Professor Neil Gemmell, to try to identify all the different living species inside the loch. They said they couldn't find any trace of a prehistoric beast or an unusually large fish species. However, what they did find was a huge amount of eel DNA, and they said this could suggest that there were large eels wriggling and swimming their way through the loch. Given their long, flexible bodies, maybe eels have been misidentified as the Loch Ness Monster in the past.
So wait a minute, the eDNA turned up eel DNA, huh?
Back to business, I think, and Gary makes the same point.
Certainly, as expected, he hadn't found any dinosaur DNA. In fact, he hadn't found any reptilian DNA at all. No reptilian DNA, that means no plesiosaur, which means no Nessie. But that's only one strand of the possibility. But I think the biggest takeaway was the fact that 25% of all the DNA samples that he took weren't identified. That's a quarter of all samples failed to find a explanation.
Gary makes the same point as Steve. He knows that people fishing on the loch have seen large eels, but the missing 25% raises a lot of questions. And aren't some of those other missing animals possible explanations for Nessie as well? You know, if it's a really foggy day, couldn't the bobbing head of a seal in the fog be mistaken for the hump of a monster? Or the sleek back of an otter heading back below the surface to hunt? That could look strange too. Should we be taking this really very seriously at all?
Well, that's a really good point, Kieran. According to Adrian Shine, who spends a lot of his time looking at all of these different Loch Ness studies, the eDNA results didn't include seals or otters because there aren't enough of them in the loch at any one time to be detected. So as a result, the test doesn't offer a full view of absolutely everything inside these vast, deep and murky waters of Loch Ness. While some people see the test as like the closest we've got to finding an explanation of Nessie, others think it's better to keep the mystery alive.
What Nessie has, and this might be why Nessie is so popular, Nessie has a mystery. Nessie isn't really a story, Nessie is a question. Nessie is, does she exist? Will you see her? Is she real? What might she be? Is she a dinosaur? And we don't, no one has ever actually asked those questions about kelpies or selkies. Nobody really believes that kelpies or selkies or mermaids or dragons are real. We're happy to tell the stories and enjoy the narrative and imagine the pictures. And yeah, I mean, I write adventure novels about all of these creatures and have great fun with them, but no one ever really says to me, do you think they're real? People ask me if Nessie's real all the time. So that maybe that's the power of Nessie. It's not that she's got a story. It's that because she's a mystery, we can make up our own stories about her.
So at the end of this investigation, what have we found out? For thousands of years, people have thought that something strange lived in Loch Ness. First it was a kelpie, then it became a new modern monster. And to this day, people still report unexplained ripples or movements in the water. Actually, more theories than answers. We've got prehistoric fish, giant eels, seals. Maybe Nessie's nothing more than a figment of our imaginations, which can so easily run wild during a walk around this atmospheric loch.
With so many ideas to think about, Dan, I think we should ask the experts what they think. Let's hear from Steve, Larry and Gary as they tell us what they believe the most likely explanation for the Loch Ness Monster mystery is.
Currently, I would say it's possibly a Wells catfish. These Wells catfish, they're the second biggest freshwater fish in the world. They live for on about 100 years. They have no predators. They eat other fish, and they seem to be almost bereft of a dorsal fin, so they have a very smooth elephant hide type skin back, which that fits with eyewitness accounts. The most common description of a sighting of Nessie is this upturned boat type back. One aspect about them is that in the Victorian era, in two lakes in England, where deliberately for coarse fishing, the estates that owned those lakes released Wells catfish into their lakes to encourage people to come and pay for a fishing license to try and catch them. Now, we've got no written record of anybody releasing catfish into Loch Ness, but we do have several estates that do own the fishing rights on the loch. So, not beyond belief that, say, 120 years ago, a dozen catfish got released into Loch Ness.
I think some people would say it's probably already been proved she doesn't exist, but do we want to hear that? Do people want to hear that? No, they don't. You're not... People don't want... People want stories and fun and excitement and mystery rather than proof. So I think it may be that it will never be possible to prove to some people's satisfaction. For 1,500 years, Loch Ness had the same stories as everyone else. And then suddenly it had a new monster, which may or may not have been connected to the monster that was 1,500 years ago. Now that to me suggests if you want to believe in Nessie, maybe Nessie's ancestor was banished, went off for a very long wander elsewhere, and then came back like a salmon going back to its original river.
You know, The Simpsons, Bart Simpson once, he came in the cartoon series and decided the best way to find out what the Loch Ness monster is was simply to drain the loch. And actually, Bart Simpson and Homer Simpson were right. That's the only way to find out what's in Loch Ness is to drain it. But to drain a size of water that's that big, just not possible. And you know, that's the most important thing to take away from this, Kieran, is it's fun. There's lots of people who are in difficult situations. The Loch Ness Monster, the Loch Ness Monster doesn't care about politics, doesn't care about religion, doesn't care about anything, doesn't care about viruses. Loch Ness Monster's there and has been there for thousands of years and continues to give us a bit of entertainment by sticking our head above the water and letting us know that we're here. And then, as you say, continues to play hide and seek with us going, you can't just catch me. And that's the great thing about it.
How about you, Dan? What do you think the answer is?
Kieran, I love the idea that there's this long-necked plesiosaur from the time of dinosaurs lurking under the waters of Loch Ness. But, you know, the question remains, how on earth could a monster live undetected under our noses for so long? I mean, what do you think?
I think that if I was a prehistoric monster trying to hide away somewhere on Earth, Loch Ness is a pretty good place to go for that game of hide and seek. So I can believe that bit. But all the way through when we've been making this podcast, I've realised that I don't actually want to know what Nessie is. I think probably she's an eel or a fish, but that's nowhere near as exciting as the mystery we've got at the moment. So I think I'm probably agreeing with Larry that the mystery is best as the mystery.
Well, we've heard from the experts, and now it's time for everyone listening to have your say. What do you think? Is Nessie an eel? Is it a catfish? Is it nothing more than an old myth to keep us entertained? We want to hear from you. Email hello@science-nature.co.uk to tell us what you think, either by writing in an email or recording your thoughts on a short video and sending it in.
We'll include some of those emails in a future episode of Mysteries of Science, so make sure you get involved. A full series of podcasts will be coming later this year.
Next time, we'll be turning our attention away from the monsters on Earth to answer one of the biggest questions. Are we alone in the universe? Until then, stay curious.
I hope you enjoyed that. That was the first ever episode of Mysteries of Science. Remember, you can follow or subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to this right now. Just search for Mysteries of Science and you won't miss any of the upcoming episodes, which will be released fortnightly from the end of May. And if you enjoyed it, why not rate and review us as well? We'll be back with the Week Junior Show as normal later this week.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.